believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. This is Two-Way Radio. Again, I'm feeling just a little bit under the weather. I went fly fishing last weekend with one of my very best friends. We actually went to high school together back in the day and hooked back up through some mutual friends, and then we ended up working together as firearms instructors. One of the most talented natural shooters I have ever met in my entire life. Still holds today. He's been out of the Marine Corps since 1992 and still holds 3 Marine Corps shooting records to the best of my knowledge. And that cough, pardon me, is what I was bringing this all up about. Still feeling a little under the weather. I got some sort of congestion, some sort of nasal congestion. So I'm decided to attack it. I am not much of a yogurt fruit smoothie kind of a guy, but I made myself one this morning and trying to hawk that down, see if I can get this thing kicked over the weekend and be back to 100% on Monday. I'm not really a fruit smoothie kind of guy. I'm not really a Starbucks kind of guy. I don't even drink coffee. I don't like the flavor of it. Some people think, you know, Bill, you're almost 40 years old, you don't drink coffee. No, I just don't like the flavor. There is actually one thing that I enjoy at Starbucks, and it's a type of tea that they have. It's the only thing in the world I know how to order, and the only reason I know how to order is I keep the name of it on my PDA in a little note file. So when they ask me what I want, I can read off of it. I don't know what any of that crap means. I don't have any idea what a Venti Tazzo Frappuccino Latte blah da 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 is. And it actually sounds quite emasculating to actually see a man know that menu inside and out and start ordering off of it. If I've offended any of you, sorry, I just don't understand it. I just don't understand it. Okay, on to the topics at hand. The only two states in the entire U.S. that don't have any legal provision whatsoever for concealed weapons permit are Wisconsin and Illinois. The battleground in Wisconsin heated up a few months ago when the chief of police in Milwaukee, and was supported by the sheriff of Milwaukee County, decided that if they ever see anybody out there on the street with a gun, they've instructed their quote-unquote troops, as the chief of Milwaukee said, that they're going to put them on the ground, take their gun away, cuff them up, and then decide whether or not they have the right to carry it. Total violation of rights. I did a big, long spiel about that, wrote an open letter to the chief, let him know how that was illegal, and he was criminally and civilly liable, and how if anybody becomes a victim of that, they should go do a citizen's arrest on him. And potentially anybody within the chain of command of the person, the officer that arrested him. Okay, so it's heating up there. They're having a lot of guns and parks sort of picnics. Pardon me. Had to cough there. And also in Illinois, there's a big brouhaha going on there who's even more anti-gun. Now, there are states like Hawaii where you'll never get a CCW permit. They'll give out 2 or 3 a year, which is usually the number of retiring judges that apply for them. And in different areas of some of the other may-issue states, such as California, there's different cities and counties which they just won't give them out. Others that they'll just almost hand them out to anybody who applies that's legal to get one. So it's a very haphazard system. However, in the two states that don't have CCW provisions, things are heating up. So I've got a couple stories for you after the break about what's happening in Illinois. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, here's a little story for you. It's entitled, More Than a Dozen Victims Shot in Chicago Overnight. 7 victims in one attack, a total of 15 hurt over a 4-hour period. All right, at least 15 people were shot and wounded in Chicago overnight, 7 of them in a single incident on the city's west side. In that incident, police were called to the scene of a shooting at Walnut Street and Hammond Boulevard at 10:43 p.m., 7 people were shot, according to the Fire Media Affairs Director, Larry Langford, who said 6 people were initially hospitalized in critical condition, and 1 person, an adult man, was taken in stable condition after suffering a graze wound. 1 person was found shot inside a grocery store, and 6 others were found within a half block radius of the store. All victims were male, Langford said. They range in age from 15 to 28 and were taken to Northwest Memorial Hospital, St. Anthony Hospital, and Stroger Hospital of Cook County for treatment for their wounds. The shooter or shooters were unknown early the following day, and no one is in custody, according to police. About an hour earlier, 3 people, including a woman standing with her baby in a stroller, were shot within 20 minutes in separate incidents on the south and west sides. In the South Shore neighborhood, about 9:30 p.m., a 22-year-old man was shot in the hand and suffered a minor head wound on Avalon Avenue. The shooting was preceded by a carjacking more than 2 hours earlier in the 8800 block of South Parnell Avenue when 5 suspects approached the victim and physically removed him from his vehicle at gunpoint, according to police. The suspects then put him in their vehicle and took him to his residence, where they stole his TVs. After the robbery, they drove him to the Avalon Avenue address where they beat him and shot him as they ran away. The man was taken to Stroger Hospital of Cook County in stable condition. At 9:31, near the intersection of King and 64th in the Woodlawn neighborhood, a 25-year-old woman was shot. She was standing outside with her baby in a stroller, talking to friends on the grounds of a gated housing development when 3 males wearing black hoodies burst out of a nearby auto zone and started opening fire, according to a Grand Crossing District police captain. The woman, who was not the target of the shooting, then felt a sharp pain in her lower right leg and discovered she was shot, according to the captain, who said the baby was fine and no one else was shot. The woman was taken to University of Chicago Hospital in good condition, according to the captain. In a third shooting, a 22-year-old man walking into Loretto Hospital with a gunshot wound to the ankle after being shot on LaPorte Avenue in the West Side's Austin neighborhood about 9:50. I guess the take-home message is stay away from the west side of Chicago. That just seems like you would be a bullet sponge just being around there. Police News Affairs Officer Ron Gaines said the shooting possibly happened during a robbery and that the victim was in good condition at the hospital. But even after all that, the violence wasn't over. At 11:02, 2 men were shot as they sat on a porch on Springfield Avenue and the Little Village neighborhood. They were shot by members of a rival gang who came by on foot. 1 victim was shot in the chest and the other one shot in the eye, and both went to Mount Sinai Hospital in stable condition, who said injuries did not appear to be life-threatening. I gotta tell you, if the guy got shot in the eye, it had to be an oblique angle. Nobody gets shot directly in the eye and survives. A shot to the cranio-ocular cavity is non-survivable unless it's an oblique angle. That had to be it. Let's see, not long afterwards, a man was hit by gunfire in the 4200 block of South Wells when 2 other males began shooting at 11:20 p.m. The victim was hit in the leg and taken in stable condition to the hospital. Farther south, a teenage boy was shot and wounded late Tuesday while walking in the South Champlain Avenue area. The shooting was a drive-by, and the police are looking for a white GMC. The teen was hit in the right side and is in good condition at Advocate Christ Medical Center in Oak Lawn. Detectives said the victim was treated and released. In another incident, a man was shot and critically wounded on Cornell Avenue in the South Shore neighborhood. He was shot and wounded in the upper chest at 1:19 a.m. The man had been sitting in his car where investigators found blood. But he was found shot on the street about four doors down, according to police. He was taken to Northwest Memorial Hospital in critical condition. All of this within 4 hours in Chicago. In Chicago, it is illegal to own a handgun. All right? So they are in the Seventh Circuit, the jurisdiction of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Pardon me, had to cough. And the Seventh Circuit heard a case brought by the NRA and Gun Owners of America and a couple other groups that would mimic against, they were using Heller to fight against Chicago's draconian anti-handgun laws. And that's where the Seventh Circuit said, well, you know, the Heller only applies to federal jurisdictions, and Washington, D.C. is a federal jurisdiction, it's not a state. Right? So, when it comes to legislation for pro-Second Amendment stuff, such as in California, when they wanted to go to a may issue rather than a shall issue, big group against it was the Association of Police Chiefs and Sheriffs within California. They did not want to give up their control of a mother may I system. They didn't want to go on a full state system. An Illinois mayor laments a fact that concealed carry is playing almost everywhere but in Peoria. There's an old saying that if it plays in Peoria, it will play anywhere. Thankfully, Peoria, Illinois Mayor Jim Artis is now on record as supporting concealed carry in Illinois and wants Peoria to be the test city. Additionally, the Peoria Journal-Star is reporting that the Illinois Sheriff's Association has also passed a resolution in favor of legal concealed carry. The question is why? Why would the Illinois Sheriff's Association be in favor for legal concealed carry? The reason is they are at their wits' end with all of the violence in the cities in Illinois because the people are unarmed. It's almost like being a British subject where you have no rights to self-defense. It's just like that. Here's from the story. Several local police chiefs and other personnel said putting fear into the minds of criminals on the streets is also one of the best arguments for allowing concealed carry. Here's a quote. If you're not sure if a guy has a gun, you may not try to do something to him that you might otherwise try to get away with, said Peoria Police Officer Troy Skaggs, president of the Peoria Police Benevolent Union. It's the fear of the unknown. Illinois and Wisconsin are the only two states without some type of concealed carry law. In February, the Illinois Sheriff's Association passed a resolution supporting a concealed carry law in Illinois with several conditions in place. Then in May, Peoria Mayor Jim Artis expressed public support for Peoria becoming a test city for nationwide legislation that would allow people to carry guns in a responsible way. During a recent 10-week stint at the FBI's National Academy, which brought 250 worldwide law enforcement executives to Quantico, Virginia, Peoria Police Chief Stephen Settingsgard said, "Everyone I spoke to was in favor of concealed carry. The stance of the Illinois Sheriff's Association, Bartonville Police Chief, and countless law enforcement agencies in Illinois stands in stark contrast to the opposition shown by noted anti-gun Chicago Mayor Richard Daley. Daley, famous because of his childlike temper tantrums after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on the Second Amendment, is an individual right, will never drop his opposition to concealed carry in Illinois. Being that he commands so much power in the state, it is unlikely the citizens of Illinois will ever have their right to self-defense restored. Instead, Daley is likely to react in his typical childlike manner if concealed carry passes in Illinois. The stance of the Illinois Sheriff's Association and the Peoria administration shows progressive thought on the concealed carry issue, which is the complete opposite of Daley's outlook on the issue. He made up his mind years ago that the people in his personal fiefdom of Chicago would never be allowed to carry concealed guns, and that is the end of the issue in his mind. Still, it is encouraging that the tide is turning in other parts of the state and that some officials are starting to see the concealed carry isn't a risk to public safety. The anti-gun bias rampant in the Chicago media is also likely to color coverage of the debate so that honest people won't get an honest assessment of the pros and cons of concealed carry." So here's what we're going to break this whole thing down to. In Chicago and the surrounding areas, they are anti-gun. They don't want you to have guns. In the rest of Illinois, they are looking to pass concealed carry. It's got to be done at the state level, and it's got to be done with state preemption so that no city or town, this jackass Daley, or anybody else could say, you're not going to do it in my town. It's got to be done with state preemption so everybody fits into the same size shoe when it comes to concealed weapons. It's got to be done that way. It's also got to be done on a shall issue system, or if it's a may issue, it's got to be handled by the state with nothing to do with local police chiefs or local sheriffs, because that puts way too much BS into the system, like in California, like in Hawaii. There's 39 shall issue states. There are 9 may issue states. If you want to get this done in Illinois, it's got to be done either on a state level with a state preemption or a shall issue system on a preemption, so that different counties and cities cannot pass laws against it, especially Chicago, where everybody's getting shot, as you just heard with that story. More when we return from the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
So I get quite a bit of listener email, and I enjoy it. I really do. I really enjoy. I sit down on my computer, and I go to open up my Bill at 2A Radio email address and look to see what's come in. And I really enjoy opening that up and seeing the comments and the things that are there. And oftentimes people will send me links to different stories and, you know, caveat on something that I said on the radio today, or give me their opinions. There's a fellow by the name of Pete. Pete, I'm sure you're listening. If not now, you'll be listening to an archive in the car later. And Pete and I have incredibly candid emails. I mean, it is PG-13 rated sort of emails. We don't pull any punches when we're trying to get across a message. And Pete and I really see eye to eye. Hope to meet the guy someday when he needs to get some training done. Maybe I could be around. And we just talk specifically about, you know, different gun stuff. He built one of his AR-15s into a Ronin. Seems to really dig it. Was questioning me on some of the pieces, how important they really were. I remember one in particular was the latch on the charging handle. How important is that latch on the charging handle? And I told him, I said, well, it's important. And once you get that particular latch on there, you'll understand. Sure enough, about a week later, glorious me, look at that. You are absolutely right. That charging handle piece, that latch on the charging handle is definitely the way to go. You know, going on that Brownell sent him the Ambidextrous magazine, released the wrong one, this big thing that looks like a whale tail off the back end of a 1983 Porsche Carrera. So send that back, get the right one. This is the reason why I bought it. Anyhow, I got some emails from a guy named Greg yesterday. One of them was a link to a story or to a press release on a site that had to do with different vaccinations. And it had to do with the swine flu vaccine, which is incredibly controversial. People believe that the swine flu vaccine might be ready within another month or so, and that the government might try to make it mandatory. Right? So I go to click on this link. The email wasn't more than a couple hours old by the time I got to it, and it went to a link that had been removed. And there was no longer anything on that website. I searched through and through on the swine flu vaccine. It had been removed, whatever it was. So it's kind of curious as to why that sort of thing happens. Nothing ever happens without the government's knowledge or approval, for the most part. Really. I don't know that anything does. Without their direct interjection. Now, this swine flu vaccine has not been tested. It has not been tested on any animals. It hasn't been tested on anything. And the swine flu vaccine of 1976 caused people to have very severe reactions, in some cases, neurological problems. Some people lost their ability to operate, neurologically speaking, when it came to being able to walk or speak or do just mundane acts. So now we're looking at doing this swine flu 2.0. Yeah, not on my watch, guys. I got to tell you, listen to the sponsors during the commercials on RBN. When you're listening live, listen to the sponsors. There's a lot of sponsors that have great natural things that will help protect you from things such as disease and, pardon me, had to cough, disease and viruses. Here's the thing. I've got to tell you, having worked as a contractor for the Department of Defense at Dugway Proving Ground, you can look it up, Dugway Proving Ground, not Z, there's no S at the end of grounds, it's one ground, the size of New Hampshire. Dugway Proving Ground, where that's the nation's leading chemical and biological testing facility, along with Aberdeen in Maryland. They complement each other. And we had to deal with things such as, in biological terms, with viruses. And it is incredibly difficult to ever deal with a virus. There are natural products out there which will help out in keeping you from contracting a virus or make your body so healthy in ways that viruses are unattracted to remain within your system. They might remain in vitro, but not inside your system. In vitro meaning basically like a test tube. So if you do not want to do the swine flu vaccine or any flu vaccine, or get a head cold like me, get into these sorts of things. Listen to some of these sponsors, do some research on your own, and get into this sort of stuff. That's really going to save you. I have no idea when I was a kid what got put in me with all the different vaccines. You know that, like, what, one in 140 kids today have autism. And they have autism, and a lot of it's being traced back to the inoculations that they're getting. Because these inoculations, these shots that they're getting when they're kids, have a preservative, and the preservative has a mercury-based foundation to it. So they're getting little bits of mercury introduced. And when you're a little kid, your body cannot handle those heavy metal poisonings very well in a lot of cases, at least one out of 140. And that mercury goes around the brain and screws all kinds of stuff up. All right, my ex-wife got remarried. She had a son. He was doing fine until he got inoculations. He now is heavily affected by autism. And she's doing her very best to try and get this fixed. So, just keep that in mind. You don't want to go through the swine flu vaccination? That's great. I'm not going to do it. Look at some other remedies to keep yourself from getting sick when swine flu really starts to get out there. Provided it does, be prepared. All right, more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So recently I came on the air and I addressed some emails that came in. I had one email in particular that said, Bill, how would you have handled yourself in the wake of the post-Katrina gun grab when cops and whoever it was, National Guard, whatever it was, were going door to door, taking people's guns, illegally. Illegal entry, illegal seizure of guns, based on an illegal order. How would I have handled myself? And my articulation was this. I would try to talk these guys into not doing it, and if that didn't work, when they busted in, I'd take one of them hostage, and I would negotiate from that position. But I would not just give up my guns. And if it came down to actually having to get into a firefight with these guys, that's something I have long ago prepared myself to do. Nobody is going to violate my rights and break the law to try to take my guns. And I have gotten so much listener email about this. So much. And a lot of people, most of it is all, man, you got some balls on that one. That's an impressive sort of deal. I wonder if you'd actually hold true. Well, I'll tell you right now, I flat guarantee I would. There are certain things that you do in life. One of them is, in my opinion, I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to give some sort of unlawful order, which is going to require me to live on my knees. I'll go down for that one. My kids will grow up with my life insurance money supporting them for that one. I flat guarantee it. I'll also flat guarantee that at least a few are going to go down following this illegal order if they really want to turn up the heat with me. That's just the way I have set my mind to it. That's just the way it is. There is no difference at all in a group of thugs breaking in my door to put me down and take my stuff as opposed to a group of badge-toting thugs trying to do the same thing on a warrantless illegal entry following illegal orders to commit illegal acts. Now, when someone holds up their right hand and swears to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state in which they are going to be doing this law enforcement activity against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and yet they follow an illegal order to and violate that oath, some people believe that police officers, law enforcement officers, peace officers, whatever you want to call them, some people believe that they somehow are anointed some level of immunity by following orders that otherwise might be illegal. A lot of constitutional scholars look at it quite a bit differently. If you swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state in which you're performing these things, if you're state down to city police officer, if you hold up your hand and swear to uphold those things, most constitutional scholars would look and say no. In fact, they have no immunity from that because they went so far as to uphold these documents and swear within that oath to not follow illegal orders. And if they do, it's even worse because they said they wouldn't. They swore an oath that said they would not. Now, the huge problem, as I see with that, is where a lot of these oaths that are taken blindly. When I graduated the police academy, there were 60-some-odd people in that academy. And something tells me that at least the high number of 50s never once read the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of the state of Nevada. I am guilty for having never read the Constitution of the state of Nevada. I still haven't. I guess I should probably do that. But the Constitution of the United States, I did know. I'd read that, read all the amendments. But a lot of people swore to uphold this thing. And this, for a number of them, it's the second time they did. The first time was when they were in the military. They get out, join the police department, they take it again. So to have people swear to uphold documents of which they are completely unfamiliar is crazy. There is an organization out there called Oath Keepers. I believe their website is oathkeepers.org. I'm doing my very best to get the founder of that organization to come on the air and share a few things with the audience. As you can imagine, he's a pretty busy guy. Luckily, he lives right here in Las Vegas, right near me. So hopefully we can get together and share that on the air. But again, back to the issue at hand. If, say the group of guys that busted into the Florida home of the couple that were adopting and raising a bunch of essentially orphans and doing good things, bunch of bad guys bust into their home, kill them, take a bunch of property of theirs, rob the place, and then leave. What's the difference between that and guys with badges making the same illegal entry? The answer is nothing. Cops are not immune from breaking the law. They oftentimes get away with it. You know, like if you're driving 80 in a 65, a cop might clock you going the other way, and now they're going to do 90 to try to catch up to you. Is it legal for them to go 90 in a 65? The answer is no, but it's overlooked so that they can pull you over and generate that revenue. I want to make certain things very, very clear. A lot of cops that do this aren't even entirely aware of it. Quite a few are. When it comes to things such as simple traffic violations, such as speeding or changing lanes without signaling in an area where it's kind of safe, things like that, those sorts of violations, when they write those tickets, is for nothing more than revenue generation. That is it, to generate revenue for the state. Or the city, the county, where whatever jurisdiction you're in, whoever they work for. That's it. And a lot of cops who do these sorts of tickets know that. A lot do not. So we have only a certain amount of law enforcement officers, of peace officers, that are actually out there doing law enforcement or peacekeeping. There's also a certain amount that are there to generate revenue. That is why they exist. Why someone would ever want to join some sort of agency and become any kind of a cop to do nothing more than revenue generation is beside me. I knew guys when I was in the police academy that their goal was to end up going to traffic. Now, traffic, a lot of people believe that traffic is the starter point. In most law enforcement agencies, in most police departments, the opening thing is patrol. You start off in patrol. And if you want to go to traffic, like riding the motorcycles, you have to test into that. Some people actually want to do that. And the cops that want to do that sort of thing blow me away. Well, you don't actually want to do anything other than stop people for going 3 miles an hour over the speed limit in a school zone when their speedometer might be, you know, wagging back and forth in their 74 Chevelle. That's not accurate. Are you serious? You want to stop them for going 70 in a 60 when traffic conditions would allow for it? I can't believe it. In Southern California, it's rare that you can actually get up to speed in a pack of cars. But on the occasion you can, I got to tell you, I've been in 65-mile-an-hour zones in Southern California with like a half a second between the car in front of me's rear bumper and my front bumper. And everybody, five lanes wide in a 65, are going 75 miles an hour. And if you're not keeping up with the flow of traffic, the cops will stop you. And they'll, you know, hey, look, I didn't want to speed. You got to keep up with the flow of traffic. Otherwise, you're going to cause a backup. If somebody goes 75 and everybody starts trailing them, thank God that we're not at a standstill, which you're creating if you don't go the speed limit, or actually go with the flow of traffic, pardon me. So, pardon me, I keep hitting the mute button so I can hack along here. So, to get these cops that are revenue generators just blows me away. Realize some of those guys are around. Anyhow, we're going to get back to this. If guys with badges or guys without badges illegally bust in my door and start making demands, well, you have to negotiate with them from a position in which they're going to hear and understand. For me, if it was a post-Katrina sort of event, and they're busting in my house to take my guns and take me and possibly take my family, if they wouldn't listen to reason, they're just going to blindly follow orders, because now they're in a group of badasses, and these badasses are going to kick down my door and do their cool little, you know, house-clearing thing, because they're going to be badasses, and they're cool. Well, I flat guarantee you, I know how to counter that sort of thing. And I would definitely take one of them hostage. I'd take one of them hostage, and I'd hold them in a position where there was no clear shot on me, and I would negotiate from there. That's what I would do. What the negotiations would be, I don't know. I'd take it up from there. I would come about it from on the fly. look, you guys are pretty much, you guys are here illegally. You're following an illegal order. You busted into my house illegally to commit illegal acts. So one of a couple of things can happen. Either you can all lay down all your guns right now and submit to a citizen's arrest. Or we can forget all about this. You can get your asses out, never come back, and as soon as you're all gone and down the street, I'll let this guy go. If not, we've got a real issue. You threaten me? You threaten my life? I will start taking you guys out. And if I gotta start taking you out with this dude in front of me as my body armor, that's what I'm gonna do. So, you make the decision. You know, something along that lines. That's the way I deal with it. Let's move on. There's a lot of anti-gun policies that are out there, and we've seen them come up. We've seen, you know, good bills not pass due to votes. We had the Bush administration change policy to where you could carry guns in national parks. Then we had a judge, a federal judge, say, yeah, you know what, we're going to put a temporary stay on that because we don't believe that the Bush administration followed through like they should have. So Congress ended up passing a law that was attached to a credit card reform bill that will take effect next year in 2010 that will allow you to do just that. In the interim, just earlier this week, a couple days ago I think it was, that same federal judge that put the temporary stay on the Bush administration made it permanent so that the Bush administration change in policy could not go through. So now we have judges making policy, which is the same thing that they're not supposed to do. And Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who wants to be Justice Sonia Sotomayor, said in a taped, recorded, televised interview about when judges make policy. Oh, I know we're not supposed to do that. I'll probably get in trouble for saying that. We're not supposed to make policy. That's exactly what this federal judge did. Here's a little piece on Lou Dobbs talking about the different, I guess, regulations and anti-gunism that's going on across the country.
Well, the rights of Americans to bear arms, rights guaranteed, of course, by the Second Amendment, are being threatened. Legislation has been introduced in Congress and in states all across the country that would severely restrict the ability of law-abiding citizens to buy and to own firearms. Bill Tucker has our report.
You're more than four times as likely to die in a fire-related accident as by a gun accident. Firearms have the lowest rate of accidental deaths per 100,000 of the accidental deaths tracked by the National Safety Council. But that hasn't stopped efforts to impose tighter restrictions on gun ownership. In New Jersey, there's legislation pending to limit gun owners to one gun purchase per 30 days. The National Rifle Association says legislation in New York would outlaw firearms based on what they look like and how they are assembled with no testing procedures spelled out. Groups supporting gun ownership say the New York bill would give the state police unlimited and arbitrary power. They say the crackdown on guns is misplaced.
Gun control legislation has never been shown to do anything to dissuade criminals from getting guns or to make it difficult for them.
If someone wants to commit a crime with a gun, they don't have to go through legal channels, as legitimate gun owners and collectors do. The state bill that has the most attention at the moment is in Illinois. That bill would require a gun owner to carry at least $1 million in liability insurance. The sponsor defends his bill, saying,
we have house insurance, we have car insurance, we have a gun that's one of the most dangerous pieces of instruments in our house or within our lives that can cause and does irreparable damage. Why not have an insurance on that?
In addition to legislation at the state level, there is also legislation pending in Congress.
The one that has everybody's attention at the moment is H.R. 45. That's currently in committee. Gun owners are alarmed at this bill because it would require every gun they own to be registered and every registration to be renewed every 5 years. The way the gun owners see it, opponents to gun ownership and Second Amendment rights simply want to strip away that right by simply making it too expensive and too bureaucratic to own guns, Lou.
It's obvious, it's transparent, it's blatant. It's an assault on the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
Bill Tucker, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So the shall not be infringed part of the Second Amendment has been lost. They're infringing. You know, in H.R. 45, this Bobby Hoyt, I think is the guy's name, who actually penned this thing. Keep in mind, the guy who penned H.R. 45 is out of Chicago, which is an anti-gun era area. This guy that penned it is a former Black Panther leader and did, what, I think it was 9 or 10 months on illegal weapons charges back in the 70s. And yet he wrote H.R. 45, the Blair Holt, Firearms Registration Act of 2009. All it is a scheme to get your guns away from you. And shall not be infringed, which means they cannot do anything about it. But yet they want to register everything and have you pay to do this and have you run through this rigmarole. So the shall not be infringed is being completely ignored. If you have anyone who represents you, at the city, the county, the state, or the national level, that absolutely dismisses certain parts of the Constitution to serve their own purpose, you must work actively to replace them with people who will respect your rights. Whether they agree with them or not, whether they exercise their Second Amendment or not, whether they recognize the 10th Amendment or not, whether they want to or not, as long as they actually do, put them in there. The right type of politician votes for things that they would otherwise not want to see happen because their constituents want it, and they know that their interpretation is a little out of touch. That's the type of person to have in office. You got to work diligently to get that type of person representing you and everybody else. More after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back from the break. During the break, we had Bob from California calling in. Bob, welcome to 2A Radio. Bob?
Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm a first-time caller. Other than your heavy metal music, you're doing really good. I thank you very much for your talk show.
Wait a minute. Wait. You don't like my bumper music? I work really hard to make that stuff myself, just so it's not the typical mundane little softy elevator wake your ass up in the morning.
That's
music.
Even worse. I understand it, but I don't want to get into argument on that. I know you're joking too, but I'm really serious about this one topic. I'll quickly go through it about the Bill of Rights. This Supreme Court case from the 19th century. The last case that John Marshall ever participated in was never overturned. I'm not a lawyer, but recently I came across a book that talked about this case. It's called Barron versus Baltimore. It's actually longer, but if you look up Barron versus Baltimore, you can find it. It's B-A-R-R-O-N.
Well, give everybody the 411 on this. Just give us a little tidbit. We have about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Basically, Marshall gave a majority opinion that the Bill of Rights does not apply to states. It's between federal government and the people. So when the state government comes in between the federal government and the people, it doesn't apply.
That's what this case, Barron versus Baltimore, is about?
Yeah.
Looks like I'll be spending a little bit of time online this weekend looking that thing up. I got to tell you, it's not that I disbelieve you. I would imagine that probably is there.
That's why the recent, from 2 years ago or 1 year ago, the Heller case in District of Columbia, the reason they allowed handgun in that city is because it's directly between the federal government and the people.
It's going to be interesting to look up.
That was the justification for that. The reason the Chicago deal didn't work out for us is because it didn't apply.
Well, now, hold on. You're saying for us, but you live in California under the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit ruled the opposite way. The Ninth Circuit said you can actually invoke your Second Amendment rights. Now, it's interesting that we bring this up, because just yesterday, that was a Ninth Circuit small panel, the three-judge panel. The Ninth Circuit has agreed to hear this as a full panel of the entire entire group of judges on the Ninth Circuit to revisit that again and see if they come up with the same conclusion that, in fact, Heller and the Second Amendment do apply to everyone. So we're in a bit of a constitutional crisis. I appreciate you.
It's whatever the judge says. It's because of the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment created a federal citizen, and through that martial law amendment, because it was never ratified by the states, they create a loophole.
Well, you're right, but that's
1969.
If you, Bob, that's thanks for the call, by the way. I gotta let you go because we're about to come up on the end. The 14th Amendment is a piece of garbage. And if you are a 14th Amendment citizen, then things apply that way. If you are not, if you are an original citizen, then you are looked at differently. I am an original citizen. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.